So, welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After this share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So I'd like to welcome Megan, a speaker from North Carolina. Welcome, Megan.
Okay, technology is working for me. Good evening, everybody. My name is Megan. I am a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm a little bit nervous. I'm always nervous about speaking. The hardest part for me about speaking is kind of doing the background, like what it was like, and then thinking about my growing up years. And so I will say that since I've been recovered and in 12-step programs, I have a much happier childhood than I thought I had, thanks to the 12 steps and a different perspective on things. But as a child, I just felt like I was on the wrong planet. I mean, I didn't belong in my family. I didn't belong in my body. I just didn't belong. And I grew up in Southern California for the most part, by two people that stayed married and until death, and there were five of us. We were not wealthy, but not poor. We had everything we needed, and it seemed that food, weight, appearance, all of these things were issues. So my father was military, and I was keenly aware of a pecking order. I'm also the youngest. Well, there's five of us. I'm number four. So I was very aware of the pecking order. And not sure why that's important, but I guess I carried that. I somehow that perception I carried into my adult life, and it's things that I've had to let old ideas that I've had to let go of since coming into the 12-step program. But I have a sister who, from the time that I knew her, she's 8 years older than me. So when she was a young child, apparently she was not overweight. But from the time I knew her, she was morbidly obese, up until probably 10 years ago. I was always compared to that sister. And not just in appearance, but intelligence, and it just did not sit well with me. I would hear things like, "If you keep eating like that, you're going to be as big as Pam." And this is when I was a grade school child. My father was not tall, but very big, and he was very overweight most of his life, or at least what I remember. He died very young. My mom was a size two, and I never could understand, why she'd have a bite of dessert and then, get busy cleaning up the dishes. She was a very light eater her whole life. So kind of fast forward into going into adolescent years. So I came into AA or came into OA through AA, and that's important. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But basically, as soon as I could start drinking, I started drinking, and both my parents, by the way, are alcoholic or were alcoholic. So it's not a big surprise. I knew one day I'd end up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just knew I would. And I remember when I was actively drinking, wondering if I would be able to know when it was time to go. So When I came into AA, God really, he took that obsession to drink away. It just like that. I've been in AA for over 20 years. I love AA. I'm actively involved. I sponsor in AA as I do in OA. I'm very involved in both these 12-step programs. My life is pretty much, I work and I do program. And that's the way I like it. That's the way I want it to be for now. At any rate, when I realized that my eating was getting out of control, coming from 12 steps, I knew that OA existed, but I resisted. I resisted coming. I just didn't want to. And, I was gaining weight and gaining weight. And I finally just like, okay, I'll go. But I was so angry and had a resentment against God. Why couldn't God take care of the food in the same way he took care of the alcohol? And then when I went and got into OA, so this was 2009 when I came into OA, and it probably took me about 3 years before I really believed that food was the issue that alcohol was. I just didn't think that food was, for me, it was sugar and pastries and, typical stuff that a lot of us have to abstain from. I didn't believe it had the same action physically on my body. I knew that I had the same compulsion, but I didn't believe I was wired differently where food was concerned. And I had to really learn that. And I learned it the hard way by being in a recovery program and not recovering. That's how I learned it. So eventually I got connected with a phone meeting that I listen to most mornings now. And I got a sponsor from that program who took me through the steps. And that was my first go around with recovery in OA, really, after being in OA for several years. And I lost the weight, I became abstinent, and I began to sponsor. So I found myself sponsorless through, we just drifted apart. I went to one of the conventions and I asked somebody else to sponsor me, and I got another sponsor. But I couldn't seem to, so what happened is I relapsed, and it wasn't a relapse like that took me back out and I regained all my weight. It was, one day I was able to follow my food plan, the next day I wasn't. And it was just this dance back and forth. And what I have come to understand and believe in a way that I didn't at that time was that, and this is the way my current sponsor explained it to me, my food plan is a commitment to God. I commit my food plan to God, then I commit it to myself, and then I commit it to my sponsor. So my sponsor's third on the list. And so that plan for that day, and when I would hear people say for 40 years they've measured everything precisely, they've absolutely, done everything correctly, I'm like, I don't know if I really buy that. BS. I just can't believe that. But I've come to believe that that is the case for some people. And I believe it because God has graced me with the ability to do that for a consistent period of time now. And I have been doing in that. So what I really wanted to talk about, and I hope that I've given you a little bit of kind of what it was like, sort of what happened and what it's like today. It's really, that's the part I really want to focus on. So as a person who, didn't feel like I belonged on this planet, I've gotten much more comfortable in my own skin. And I'm not thoroughly comfortable. There are times when I'm in a crowd of people and I feel much more comfortable if I have a job, a task to focus on, because sometimes it's just really hard. I'm an introvert by nature and I don't know how to block out all the stimulus, and I feel overwhelmed when I'm in a crowd of people. So if I have a job I can focus on, it helps. And that's just the way that I'm wired today. But I'm okay with doing that. I don't stay away from social events because I feel uncomfortable. I go. So before the meeting, I was kind of looking through the big book and landed on the whole spiritual experience and spiritual awakening. And really what that, so the spiritual experience is part of what happens when, well, that is what happens going through the steps in abstinence and honesty. And what it caused in me is that personality change, the change from the obvious change from not thinking about food and not needing to eat the kinds of foods that I used to eat. I feel really comfortable with with the food that I have planned and prepared now. Personality change. I'm different in that. So, you know, this whole selfishness, self-centeredness, this we think is the root of our problem. I got to tell you, the first time I ever heard that, I was so offended. I was married at the time. I was raising a child. I was working full time. I was always giving something to somebody. How dare they say that I was selfish and self-centered? What I didn't understand about that was it didn't mean that I was being cruel or ungiving to other people. It just meant that I spent more time thinking about myself and my own needs. And I really, this is, to me, this is just a phenomenal thought. Caring about other people and thinking about other people and their needs and the ability to do that today, more than not, is new for me. I just didn't, I wasn't wired to do that. I just didn't know how to do that. It wasn't that I didn't mean to be or didn't want to be, but I didn't know how to do that. And so the process of being in this program and connecting with people, making those three calls a day and putting myself out on the GroupMe now and, you know, keeping those connections, it has helped shape me to think about other people. And I'll tell you, I'm happiest when I'm not thinking about myself. So there's a lot to be said for that. Three calls a day, are you kidding? But now I do it, you know. I did it. I did it for going through the steps, and I continue to do that. It's really important to me to maintain those connections. And for all of the people who make themselves available, who have their recovery, but still make themselves available as I was coming up, and now I do the same for other people coming up, that means the world to me that there were people available, willing to give me their time and attention so that I could learn how to recover and learn how to be more of a giver. Let's see. I think one of the critical things, if I didn't say this specifically, is that I want to be different today. I want to be a different person than I was, you know, yesterday, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And I see progress. I never meet my standards, and I'm starting to come to terms with that, that I'll never. You know, as long as I'm a human being, I'm not going to be perfect. And that's today, that's okay. Some days that's very frustrating, but today that's okay. Let's see. Let me just take a drink of water. One of the things that I really like in what describes in the spiritual experience about the personality change. There's a sentence in there that says, what takes place in a few months could have hardly been accomplished with years of self-discipline. And before I came into the 12-step rooms, I spent a lot of time and money in therapy and seeing counselors and, you know, trying to fix myself. But I didn't know what I spent my effort on was trying to fix the outside, you know, the people around me, my environment, if only I lived here, or if only I had this relationship, you know, those are the kinds of things that I focused on. I really didn't know it was an inside job. I had no clue that what I needed to do was change myself to meet the conditions of life. Sometimes that's still really hard for me. Some days I breeze through, and other days I have tantrums because things don't go my way. I usually don't act those out in public, but under my breath, I might. So, but you know, even still, I mean, that's just part of being human and growing. Even still, I have a process now. I do 10 steps. There's someone that I connect with on a regular basis several times a week, and we do our 10 steps. If I need to talk outside of the, you know, our scheduled time, I can call her. I can also, one time I was at, this was an AA weekend. It was a service weekend, so it wasn't a meeting weekend. And after the first day, I shared about this recently. After the first day, and they dismissed us. I just wanted to crawl out of my skin. I was so antsy, and I could not understand what was going on. I could not put words to the way that I felt, nor could I intellectually understand what it could make that connection. So I put my name out on the GroupMe and said, I'm at an AA service meeting and I need some calls. I need to speak to OA people. And I got calls, and you know, people, one person just prayed with me. She just prayed with me. Another couple people let me sort of try to articulate what I was experiencing. And then that night I did my review. And then in the next morning, when I had my quiet time, all of these little events came together. And when I realized what God was telling me, so what I realized was this was supposed to be an AA function, and I didn't feel God's presence, nor did I feel like the people facilitating this business meeting invited the presence of God in. And that's what was bothering me. And what God told me in my quiet time is, don't wait for someone else to invite me in. You invite me in. And that was just such a, it was one of those connection moments that I had when I really put the effort into to muddle through the discomfort. On the other side of that is a spiritual experience, and that's what I had. But the work has to happen first. It's just, you know, that's the way we are. The work has to happen first. So whenever I'm disturbed, whenever I have a disturbance, it's an opportunity for me to have a spiritual experience if I apply the tools and do the work that's in front of me. Oh, gosh, I forgot to set my timer.
You have 10 minutes left.
10 minutes, okay. Let's see. I think that I guess I'll just talk a little bit about what my spiritual disciplines are today. I work with an awesome sponsor, and I do a nightly review, and I text it to her every evening, and it's a list of about 10 or 15 questions, and it doesn't take, you know, it could take anywhere from probably 10 minutes is the average. It might take a little longer if I have something that's been bothering me that, which can happen. And so like I do the 10th step during the day if something comes up, but I'm one of these people, I'm a fast mover, I'm a fast thinker, I like to be busy. A lot of times stuff will happen and I just bury it. That's what I learned, right? That was my coping method. Growing up is I just buried it and I don't even know it's there. It like hits and it's gone. And doing the nightly review has really helped me to catch some of those disturbances, even when they're small. That's especially when I need to pay attention. I have learned that I cannot let anything slide, because what What has historically happened is that I either immediately or inevitably pick up the food again. So I'm learning how to not do that by addressing those disturbances. So I do the nightly review. I also, a couple of things I changed, but I have an AA sponsee and I text it to her as well as a way of modeling how to do with a nightly review. I have to say that all due respect to AA that I love, by and large, my exposure to working the steps has been much more diligent in a way than it has in AA. And when I sponsor AA people today, I basically do it the OA way because I think it's more effective. And I think it's better. I mean, you know, what better way to help somebody have a spiritual experience than by this intensive work that we do when we go through the steps? It took me probably a year and a half to go through the steps the first in AA the first time I went through. And it usually takes me about 3 months to take somebody through now. So anyway, in the mornings I have my quiet time. There's a couple of devotionals that I listen to. There's a couple of things that I read, and then sometimes I write out prayer. Mostly I speak prayer. A lot of times I don't speak and I'm just sort of quiet. I'm not a big talker, so especially in the morning. So sometimes I'm just contemplative. And that style seems to be working for me right now. And then through the day, I usually have at least one or two scheduled calls with mostly OA people, but on occasion, AA people. I sponsor two women in AA and three women in OA. And as much as I love sponsoring, that's all I can handle right now. At any rate, I work full time. Fortunately, my commute is just up the staircase, so that makes it a little easier. And it also gives me some flexibility to take calls during the day, which I have done and can do on occasion. And then I usually listen to the phone meeting in the mornings, and then most evenings I go to a meeting, either a face-to-face or a Zoom meeting, except Wednesdays, and that's when I meet with my AA sponsor. So I meet with my AA sponsor every 2 weeks and my OA sponsor every week at this point. So I really believe in sponsorship. My history in OA, every time I had a relapse, it was when that sponsee relationship fell apart. And in AA, I have never gone without, in over 20 years, never gone without a sponsor. And I believe in using that sponsor, working with that sponsor, connecting with that sponsor. So that's what I do. I go to two AA meetings a week face to face, and I do three Zoom OA meetings a week, and then the and sometimes more. You know, if something's going on, if somebody I know is speaking, I will go and support. Locally, if there's a group having an anniversary, I will go and support that. I'm so grateful to be a part of this program. I think that I would have probably blown my brains out a long time ago if I didn't find the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And by the way, that, you know, the anger about God coming into having to do two 12-step programs, what I feel now, what I've come to understand is, I would have never sought God with all of my heart if I didn't have to come into OA as well as AA. There's something about AA, and again, no disrespect, but once the alcohol is done, gone, once that's gone, a few meetings, a few sponsees, a few events are fine. Nothing like the intensity of OA. If I didn't have to, I wouldn't have. And today I feel like God wanted all of me. So he gave me two 12-step programs. And when I retire, there might be another. Who knows? But for right now, I'm going to keep it the way that it is. And I know I still have a few minutes left on the clock, but I'm done. Thank you so much.
Okay, Dawn.
Thank you. Thank you, Megan. Thank you so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope.